Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Jessica Ilani. On behalf of CME Outfitters, I would like to welcome you and thank you for joining us for today's CMEO briefcase entitled Managing Migraine in Emergency Medicine Practice Settings. This activity is supported by independent educational grants from AbbVie and Pfizer. I'm Dr. Jessica Ilani once again. I'm the director of the Georgetown Headache Center and a professor of clinical neurology at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital in Washington, D.C. I'm delighted to be joined today by my distinguished colleague. Would you like to introduce yourself, Dr. Greenberg?
Thank you so much, Dr. Ilani. My name is Dr. Karen Greenberg. I currently serve as the Assistant Dean of Clinical Education for Drexel University College of Medicine, and I am double board certified in emergency medicine and neurocritical care. And I've made a little niche for myself these past years where I specialize in the neurologic emergencies that come to the emergency department, of course, including headache.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited for this program. So let's go through our learning objectives. Our first objective is to utilize validated screening tools and diagnostic aids to diagnose migraine in the emergency medicine practice setting. Our second objective is to integrate knowledge of the role of calcitonin gene-related peptide, or CGRP, in migraine and updated professional guidance into shared decision-making for acute treatment and prevention of episodic migraine with CGRP receptor antagonists. Now let's meet our patient, Calvin, who's presenting to the emergency department.
Hi, Calvin. My name's Dr. Greenberg. I'm one of the emergency physicians working today. I was reading the triage note, and I see that you're here with a headache today. Can you tell me more?
Yes, it's been unbearable. I've had bad headaches on and off probably since my early 20s, but this one is seriously bad, and I'm just tired of dealing with it. Didn't know if something else might be wrong or not, and I don't deal with this kind of thing.
I'm sorry to hear that. Let's try to get some more information. Can you tell me when did the headache start, and how would you describe the pain?
It started maybe about 8 hours ago and got worse gradually through the day. It feels like a throbbing, stabbing pain on the right side of my head, and it's making me sick. I've thrown up twice so far.
That can actually be very typical of some sort of headaches. Do you have any idea what might cause your headaches normally, and why do you think this one started when it did?
Usually it feels random, honestly. Sometimes maybe stress makes it worse. This time, I don't know. I felt totally fine yesterday and even today, not long before it started.
See, thanks for sharing all of that with me. Are there any other symptoms, vision changes, difficulty speaking, maybe weakness?
Now that you mention it, I did have some blind spots that came up when it first started. Think that may be getting a little better now. That's why I got a ride over here.
Okay, that was probably smart. And on a scale of 1 to 10, what number would you rate your discomfort?
About an 8 out of 10.
Would you say that there's any weakness anywhere?
Now that you mention it, weak. I think may just be from the pain.
Can you tell me where the weakness is? Would you say that it's more localized to one side of your body compared to the other? Or are you just feeling generally weak all over?
I'd say like on the right side of my body, from arms down to my feet.
Okay, that can be important. So thanks for sharing that. Have you taken any medications or done anything to try to relieve the pain before coming to the emergency department?
Yeah, I took some ibuprofen an hour after it started, one pill, I think about 400 milligrams, but it didn't help at all.
Okay. So we're definitely going to run some tests to rule out any serious conditions. What we're going to do is we're going to put an IV in. First of all, we can check some blood work, but second of all, we can give you some medication to make the pain better. Is there anything else that you want to tell me that we haven't discussed yet?
Yeah, I've been really stressed at work lately, and I'm worried that that might be making things worse.
Sure. Stress can definitely be a trigger. So we're going to take great care of you in the emergency department today. We're going to manage your pain, and let's run those tests, and then we'll talk some more.
Now that we've met Calvin, let's review the information and then some additional information we have. Dr. Greenberg, will you walk us through Calvin's case in the next two slides?
Calvin is a 35-year-old Black male who presents to the emergency department with a severe headache of gradual onset that started about 8 hours ago. He describes his headache as unbearable. It is throbbing in nature, stabbing and pain on the right side, and he rates it about an 8 out of 10. It does worsen with movement. There is some photophobia and phonophobia. He says that blind spots come up in his vision when his headache first started, which is why he could not drive over here, but that they're better now. He also reports nausea with vomiting times too. He says that he is weak and thinks that it may just be from the pain, but he does identify that weakness on the right side from his arms to his feet. His past medical history at age 35 is a little concerning, as he is a smoker and he has a history of premature peripheral artery disease. He does have a history of bad headaches or migraines since his 20s, but notes that this headache has lasted longer, especially in the intensity, compared to others. He did try taking 400 milligrams of ibuprofen an hour after it started. He does admit that he's had some increased stressors at work, and his vital signs look good. He is afebrile, no tachycardia, normotensive. On Calvin's physical exam, he's alert. He looks like he's in moderate distress from the pain, but no acute distress overall. His pupils are equal, round, and reactive to light. There's no nystagmus noted. His neurologic exam is actually normal, so cranial nerves are intact. When we test his strength, it is 5 out of 5, especially on that right side, which is important from what he shared with us in his history. Sensation's intact, reflexes are 2+ bilaterally. He's got good finger to nose and heel to shin. When we get him up and ambulate him, his gait is normal, and there are no meningeal signs such as Ed Brzezinski's or Koenig's.
Thank you, Dr. Greenberg. Let's all pause for a moment and reflect on the case so we can go on and discuss some questions. So which of the following options other than migraine is the most reasonable differential diagnosis? A, cluster headache. B, tension type headache. C, subarachnoid hemorrhage. Or D, trigeminal neuralgia. Which of the following is the most important next step in the evaluation of Calvin's headache? A, a CTA. B, a CT. C, a lumbar puncture. Or D, 5-item migraine screen questionnaire. So the correct answer to the first question is C. Given the severity and characteristics of the headache that Calvin described, it's unbearable, his pain is throbbing and stabbing, he had associated nausea, and he had visual disturbances, unilateral weakness, subarachnoid hemorrhage could be considered the most reasonable differential diagnosis other than migraine due to its acute presentation and neurological symptoms. For our second question, the correct answer is B. The most appropriate very next step would be CT, because we want to evaluate Calvin's headache quickly, and we want to rule out any serious conditions that could present with similar symptoms. This is where a CT head would be the fastest and most reasonable next step to perform. So Dr. Greenberg, what are some of the things we should be considering or red flags when a patient presents to the ED with a severe headache?
There are definite red flags that we consider in the emergency department, because headache is a very frequent complaint that we get. I would say that I take care of several patients in the emergency department every shift complaining of headache. And I am a big fan of mnemonics, because there's a lot of things that we have to remember in our head. So if you can remember the mnemonic SNOOP, S for systemic symptoms, is there fever or weight loss? Are there maybe some secondary risk factors like HIV or cancer that's going to point you towards getting a non-contrast head CT sooner in the workup than later? N for neurologic symptoms or abnormal signs. I think that most of us, if we have a confused patient, if we see impaired alertness or consciousness, if we pick up a ptosis or a Horner sign, I think that most of us are getting a head CT in that situation. The onset for the first O is super important. We want to know if it's that sudden onset, split second, worst intensity, and then maybe it gradually improves, but it definitely never resolves. These patients are still coming in to see us. The second O is for any patient that's presenting with a headache older in life, and in this situation, we're talking about greater than 50, and then P, previous headache. Is this new or different? Is there a change in the headache? Is it more frequent? Is it more severe? Are there different clinical features? Can you pick up some things on your physical exam, like papilledema? Is there maybe pulsatile tinnitus if you ask the patient? Can you maybe reproduce some symptoms if it's positional? And is it precipitated by exercise? Makes us more concerned for a more serious headache. If you're not a mnemonic person, I do like the rhyme that's simple to remember. And I do keep this in the back of my head with every headache patient that I'm seeing. Is it first, different, or persistent? So first headache, worst headache, different headache, persistent headache. And that's a really good start on how to approach these patients.
Dr. Greenberg, thank you for that review. I think I like your first, worst, different, persistent much better, because I am not the mnemonic person. And that is definitely, I think, a great way to remember it. First, worst, different, persistent. I'm going to remember that. So let's get back to Calvin. His results just came in. Can you go through what the results show us?
And thanks for that, Dr. Ilani. Keep it simple. First, worst, different, persistent. When we get Calvin's labs and imaging back, everything looks pretty normal. There's no elevated white blood cell counts. It doesn't look like we're headed down the meningitis route. His hemoglobin is stable. We know that anemia can cause headaches. His platelets are normal. That's always important to keep in mind. If you're going to do a lumbar puncture in the emergency department, you do need to have platelets back first. His chemistry is unremarkable. Glucose is normal. Hypoglycemia, hyperglycemia can cause headaches. And most importantly, the imaging that we get back is normal. The non-contrast CT head shows no acute intracranial hemorrhage. There's no mass effect. There's no midline shift. There's no space or occupying lesion. And his CTA shows a normal appearance of the intracranial arteries, most specifically, no evidence of stenosis, aneurysm, AVM, or vascular abnormality. No signs dissection or vascular compromise. This webinar today is not really meant to be a discussion about imaging for headache patients, but these test results are important to have back in Calvin's case. But Dr. Ilani, it looks like from what we've ruled out so far that Calvin may be experiencing migraine. Can you go over some of the different types of headache and how migraine is particularly impactful?
Sure. I think that for most of us in clinical practice, we're going to end up seeing migraine. And that is regardless of what kind of specialty you go into, whether it's internal medicine, emergency room, if you're an ENT, if you're an ophthalmologist, you know, neurologist, of course, it's one of the most common things that comes into our clinical practice. But understanding what a migraine is and what it looks like is very important. Interestingly, the most common type of headache is a tension type headache, but it's very infrequent that a person with tension type headache is coming in to seek care for their headache. So what's really the difference between tension type and migraine headache? And then cluster headache, which everybody kind of learns about in medical school as being the most severe type of headache, but really doesn't always understand, like, what is the difference between these three? So tension type headache, like I said, is the most common type. Tends to be both-sided. People will often describe a band-like pressure around their head or a sensation of wearing a hat or a cap around their head. It can be a pressure or tightness sensation. It tends to be a sensation of a muscle tightening, though when you do an exam, their muscles might not be tight or tender. And usually the pain is mild to moderate. And they infrequently will have associated symptoms. If they do, they might have mild nausea, maybe mild photophobia, but it wouldn't be both. And it's really infrequent that they have any associated symptoms with their headache. They normally have normal functionality. They can do their day-to-day things. The pain is just annoying and aggravating. Tension type headache can be known to last for several days. That's not uncommon if it's left untreated, and usually responds pretty well to over-the-counter medications, which is why often people won't come to you to discuss their tension type headache. Migraine, on the other hand, more often than not, is one-sided. It can be either frontal around the eye or in the forehead, in the temple, but can also be in the back of the head. For a patient, they're often in the same area or location, though they can side switch and they can be in different areas. So the person can feel like they have different headache types, but it's generally all the same. Migraine is when you have head pain and it's associated with other symptoms, nausea or vomiting, and light and sound sensitivity, so photophobia and phonophobia. This is part of the features of migraine. The pain gets worse with physical activity and movement, often causing the patient to prefer to lay down, especially in a dark, quiet room. Now, most people with migraine will try over-the-counter treatment to see if they get better. So when they're coming to report symptoms with you, they might tell you about what their headache feels like when it's partially treated. You might want to ask them, well, what does it feel like if you took nothing at all? Do you ever feel like you don't want to eat food, or you would prefer to be in a dark room? Or if you could do anything you wanted when you're having that type of headache, what would you do? Because the person's going to describe what they do, which they'll try to push through work and be functional. But when you ask them what they'd prefer to do, you'll often hear, oh, I would love to just lay down in a dark room with a cold pack or a hot pack on my head and really shut the world out. So that really helps you get to that diagnosis. Cluster headache, on the other hand, tends to be a type of headache that's in the V1 or V2 distribution. So it's usually around that area, around the eye, and people will describe the sense of like pain clawing their eye out. And it comes with an associated autonomic symptom, either tearing of that same eye, redness in the eye, the eye droops, or they get flushing on that side of the face, or they might get sweating on that side of the face itself. They just need one of these symptoms. The pain itself is shorter than migraine, where migraine untreated can last 4 to 6 hours. Untreated attention type headache can last for several days. Untreated a cluster headache usually lasts between 15 minutes to 90 minutes. So again, shorter than a cluster attack. And another interesting thing about cluster is a sense of agitation that comes with the headache. So a person with cluster headache does not usually sit down during the attack or lay down. They want to move. They usually pace. Sometimes they rock in place. Sometimes they do destructive things just to redirect their pain so they don't really feel the pain that's happening. So it's a very different kind of headache, and it will often come over the course of several weeks and then just suddenly stop and go away, and will often occur about an hour after REM sleep, though they can happen at the daytime as well. The average person with cluster has about 2 attacks per day, and it usually lasts about 4 to 6 weeks. So let's talk a little bit about how common migraine is, as we're going to focus in on migraine. So we're talking about the emergency room. You know, why? Why are we focused on the emergency room? Well, headache is actually the fifth most common chief complaint seen in the emergency room and comprises about 3 to 4% of annual emergency department visits. It's a pretty big deal in the ER. The prevalence of headaches are very high in the United States, and migraine affects about 1 in 6 people. This is why I was saying it's really not a specialty in medicine that you can go into where you're not going to see people who have migraine. The prevalence of migraine amongst populations in the U.S. is varied. We see that about 15% of Hispanic, 15% of Black, 15% of white patients have migraine. And the AIN population is about 18 to 19%. I mentioned briefly about the different features of migraine, but let's take a moment to talk a little bit about the diagnostic criteria. So when we look at migraine as a whole, we look at migraine as having migraine without aura, which is more common. And that's when a person has 5 attacks in their lifetime, lasting 4 to 72 hours without treatment, and has 2 features of pain, either unilateral, pulsating, moderate to severe, worse with physical activity. You need at least 2 of those. And then during the headache itself has 1 set of associated features, nausea or vomiting, or light and sound sensitivity. 30% of people with migraine have migraine with aura. And aura is a neurological phenomenon that occurs usually prior to the onset of migraine. To be diagnosed with migraine with aura, you have to have at least 2 lifetime attacks with 1 or more fully reversible neurological symptoms. Now, it is most common to have visual symptoms. 90% of people with migraine with aura will have visual aura. But there is the possibility you could develop sensory symptoms, speech or language symptoms, motor symptoms, or other symptoms such as vestibular symptoms, dizziness, motion sickness, sense of being off balance. Or you can have, you know, symptoms where you can potentially, you know, not feel well and have a slew of all of these. So a person can have more than 1 aura where they have a visual symptom first and then it resolves, and then speech symptoms and then it resolves, and then numbness or tingling and then it resolves. Each one of these aura symptoms shouldn't last more than 60 minutes and usually resolves before the next aura symptom starts. So imagine for a patient how frightening that can be, and is possibly a reason they can go to the emergency room for an evaluation. So it's important that the way patients communicate about their pain and their migraine symptoms, that we all understand that this communication can be very different, and it can change from person to person, but it can also change depending on their background, their cultural beliefs, and their health literacy. Dr. Greenberg, would you touch upon how we might think differently when evaluating different types of patients or discussing with their family or caregivers in the emergency department?
Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. Ailani, for that question. Where we're at in the 2020s now, it's really important to have cultural humility in everything that we do. And when you're considering the patient in front of you, you want to keep in the back of your mind, how might people describe things? Might they describe it differently? Different cultures, they look at pain differently. You might have 1 patient that comes to the emergency department because they've had a headache for 5 minutes, and you might not have somebody who comes to the ER for 5 days because of their headache. I've definitely seen both scenarios. I think that we've had a lot of data regarding stroke about this, where we tend to, unfortunately, deliver less care to certain patient populations. And we're now seeing that carry over into our migraine and headache population as well. So it's just something to be mindful and aware of in the emergency department.
So let's talk a little bit about diagnostic aids and screening tools. And I first want to touch upon a headache diary. Clearly, we're not going to be using headache diaries in the emergency room. This is a little difficult to really have a patient pull out a headache diary in the ER and really review that. And also for us to expect that they might have a headache diary by the time they're coming to the emergency room. But it might be a good piece of advice if a patient comes in with migraine to just make sure they are keeping a diary of their symptoms. Now let's take a moment and go through some simple screening tools. I told you the different ways to diagnose migraine with and without aura, but that is a pretty large list of things to keep memorized. And I wouldn't expect, unless you're a headache specialist, to really have that, you know, teed in the back of your mind every time you're seeing somebody with migraine. So there are some simple tools called ID Migraine and the 5-item migraine screening questionnaire that you could bring out or easily search online to pull up to ask the questions of a patient. And these screening tools have been verified and validated and shown to really correlate well with diagnosis of migraine with some simple questions. So the 3-screener ID Migraine is asking 3 questions, one about disability. Did headache limit you from work, study, or doing what you needed to do for any days in the past 3 months? We ask about nausea. Do you feel nauseous or sick to your stomach at any point when you're having these attacks? And sensitivity to light. Does light bother you a lot more when you have headaches and when you don't have headaches? Because answering yes to 2 out of 3 of these questions is very high sensitivity and specificity to having migraine. The 5-item migraine screening questionnaire is out of 15 items. 5 made the final version of yes or no, and this is looking at frequency and intensity, duration of headache, nausea, light sound sensitivity, and disability. And there's a series of questions. You can just give this to your patient to answer. And again, this has a high screening sensitivity and specificity to, if they answer yes, that the person has migraine. So let's get back to our patient case. Now we've evaluated Calvin, asked some more questions, and the team has come up to the conclusion that he's having migraine. So we know that he has a history of peripheral vascular disease, and so we'd be worried about giving him a treatment like triptans. He's also an active current smoker, so his vascular risk factors are looking a little bit high. We discussed with a patient during a conversation the idea of using a CGRP treatment, and he was very clear that he doesn't want anything injected and he doesn't want to be on a preventive. So what about an option like rimegepant? You know, Dr. Greenberg, do you ever use treatments like rimegepant ODT or even zavegepant, which is a nasal spray option, CGRP receptor antagonist, to treat patients like this, either in the emergency room or any kind of inpatient setting?
Yes, thanks so much for bringing that up, Dr. Ailani. I think that a lot of the migraine treatments that we have in the emergency department, we're going to injections or IV as first-line therapy. What I think can really be a game changer with these gepants that we call them mm-hmm. is that rimegepant comes as an oral dissolvable tablet and zavegepant comes as a nasal spray. And this could really be a game changer for these patients. Imagine if you could give somebody an oral dissolvable tablet in the emergency department, monitor them for an hour or two, their headache resolves and sends them home. That's life-changing, not just for patients, but for emergency physicians as well. And same thing with a nasal spray. You can avoid IV access. You can avoid painful procedures. Now, what I'd like to tell our colleagues who are tuning into this webinar today is these medications are available on some formularies. The biggest thing that you have to do after this webinar is bring it to your pharmacy team and say, hey, I attended this webinar today and there are some new and novel treatments for migraine. We're going to show how effective they are. But what I'm running into is the biggest barrier to emergency departments and hospitals not having them available is that providers just aren't asking for them. So after this webinar, go back, see if they're available on their formulary, and if not, make the cause for them to be available.
I think that's an absolutely excellent point. And, you know, speaking from experience, if someone who has worked on trying to get things on formulary, sometimes it's a long process, but it's actually not a very difficult process. It's just filling forms, giving data, explaining why you think it would be reasonable. And in this particular case, we actually don't have a lot of options for emergency room and inpatient setting that are cardiac safe. And I think that's once you talk to the pharmacy formulary people about that, that's pretty much all they need to hear. And I think that's a really helpful thing to remember is the safety profile involved with these treatment options. And everybody wants the patient to go home. That's what the patient wants. That's what you want. That's what really the hospital wants as well. These aren't the patients they think are best suited for being in the hospital and staying in the hospital. So that's another important argument. So we've been talking about gepants, and many formularies in the hospital still have sumatriptan sub-Q on formulary, which is a very good treatment for patients who can tolerate that treatment, who have no contraindications. Let's take a look at some profiles, what kind of data is out there about gepants versus triptan use. So there has been a study looking at real-world data on the utilization of emergency department services and injectable medications used for migraine. So they were just trying to take a look at those that use gepants versus triptans and who goes to the emergency room. And this was a study looking at the time period between 2019 and 2022, looking at adults with migraine at the TriNetX database. So just looking at one of these insurance databases. And they found that gepants, looking particularly at rimegepant and ubrogepant, but not triptans, were compared versus those were prescribed triptans but not gepants. So they were just looking at groups of patients that were on gepants and groups of patients that were on triptans just solo. So they found that, again, most of these patients were women, as that is true of our headache population, and that gepant prescriptions were found to be lower in Black and Hispanic Latino populations, higher in older individuals and those with increased comorbidities and concurrent medications. The gepant group had lower utilization of ED services and injectable migraine treatments than the triptan group. So I think that's a really important learning lesson, that it seems that while they might be older, maybe they have more comorbidities, they seem to use less health care resources. So let's go back to Calvin and see how he's doing after acute treatment.
Hi, Calvin. How are you feeling now?
Better for sure. I think the medicine I got a while ago started working.
Great. That's good to hear. That was the plan all along, to get you feeling better. Before we move forward to discuss future treatments with our neurologist, Dr. Eilani, I wanted to see if you have any questions for me about migraine headaches in general.
I don't think so far, but not sure what to ask.
Maybe can you tell me, what do you fear the most about having a diagnosis of migraine?
Well, I mean, it sounds worse than headache. Like, I associated migraine with people that have to miss work a lot. I've usually been able to get through it, but it's really tough. My job is in pharmacy, and you know, I'm usually afraid to call out. When I do work with bad headaches, though, it's all I can do to get anything done.
Absolutely. Migraines can be extremely debilitating, and you should give yourself a lot of credit for even trying to push through. It's very normal that you try to fight through the headache, but it gets to the point where you need to come to the emergency department for help. It can be tough to manage work responsibilities. There can definitely be some stigma and judgment. So we understand that you want to fight through it, but we're also happy to help. There are some effective treatments that we can recommend if you're open to it.
Yeah, for sure. Would much rather not have to deal with this on my shifts.
100%. I'd like to introduce you to our neurologist here at the hospital. She is a headache specialist and can go through some of the newer treatments with you. And we may be even able to prescribe you something that you can take home today.
Sounds good.
All right. Let me page her.
Hi, Calvin. How are you? I'm Dr. Eilani.
Hi, Dr. Eilani. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I understand you've got a couple of treatments because you were having a pretty bad headache. Sounds like maybe a migraine. How are you feeling now?
Doing a little better, you know, and thanks for seeing me today.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the treatment options that are available for you. Based on what I was told about the headaches that you were having, sounds like they can be pretty bad and you can have some associated symptoms with it. So we feel like you might be having migraine attacks. And I understand sometimes they happen at work and they can really stop you from functioning. So we think that it might be a good idea to have some treatments at home so you don't have to come back to the emergency room and really stop you from doing your different activities. And based on your history of smoking and peripheral artery disease, which is just vascular disease, blood vessel disease that can happen externally, we want to be really thoughtful about these things and make sure that when we prescribe you treatment, it's not going to make any of those things worse. So one option is one of these newer medications that's come out that would be relatively safe for someone who has a history of heart disease. These are medications in a class known as CGRP inhibitors. That's a pretty big word, I know. But basically what CGRP is, it's a big protein that we know is involved in what causes migraine. And if we're able to block the way this protein works, then we know that we can stop a migraine when it's happening. So it can be very helpful to take this treatment when you have an attack like this in the future. And we also know that these medications can be safe in people who have cardiovascular disease and also generally are well tolerated and have been shown in studies to be helpful in not only stopping migraine attacks, but if they're taken frequently, can also reduce how often attacks are helpful. So before I keep going, I know these are a lot of words and I want to make sure first and foremost that you understand what I'm saying. And second, what's your most important goal for treating your migraine?
Well, right as far as now, I would prefer to avoid IV stuff if possible. Mm-hmm. I would like to probably have something on hand for when a migraine starts. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I want to take something every day or not.
So Calvin, I think these are really good points that you're making, and it's going to help me give you some options to talk about. When we're talking about taking a pill every day or IV treatments, these are preventive options. And I think that for now, you can try to keep a calendar, a headache calendar, and track how often your attacks are happening. So this will give you a sense of how frequent are these and how disabling are they in your life. And maybe in the future, you might reconsider the idea of prevention. For now, though, we can definitely start with a couple of things, maybe an option to take as needed that still blocks the CGRP family of proteins. So we're really working on the mechanism of migraine while keeping you safe. But we can also talk about lifestyle changes. Like, for example, would you be interested in stopping smoking, which would be better for your overall health?
I don't think I am right now, but mm-hmm. maybe in the future.
Okay, well then that's definitely a good thing for us to focus on at future appointments. So let's get you started with one of these as needed treatments. So hopefully you don't have to come back to the emergency room the next time this happens and have you keep track of your headaches with the calendar. Now let's pause and test our knowledge again about CGRP receptor antagonists before we move on to discussion of these treatments. Which is the only CGRP receptor antagonist that's FDA approved for both acute and preventive treatment of episodic migraine? A, zavegepant, B, atogepant, C, rimegepant, or D, ubrogepant? Which is the only CGRP receptor antagonist that's FDA approved for the preventive treatment of both episodic and chronic migraine? A, rimegepant, B, atogepant, C, ubrogepant, or D, zavegepant? So let's review these gepants that are used for treatment in migraine, starting with the first FDA-approved treatment that was focused on the CGRP receptor as an oral treatment, which was ubrogepant. Eubrogepant is FDA approved for the acute treatment in migraine and is an oral tablet that's available as 50 or 100 milligrams. It is approved for the treatment of migraine in adults as an acute treatment. And the studies found that it had very few side effects, with greater than 2% compared to placebo having some nausea and somnolence. The nice thing about having two dose options with eubrogepant is that there is a possibility of drug-drug interactions with any of the gepants. So having multiple dose options really allows you as a clinician to dose according to what other medications the patient is on. The other unique thing about eubrogepant is it's a short-acting, short-lasting gepant. So a patient has the ability of taking a second dose if needed in the day if their migraine attack comes back. Atogepant is the only FDA-approved treatment for prevention of both episodic and chronic migraine. It comes in three dose options, again, for that dose adjustment if needed, 10 milligrams, 30 milligrams, and 60 milligrams, and is taken once daily. In its studies, there were some side effects that were noted at rates of greater than 4% compared to placebo, and they were nausea, constipation, fatigue, and somnolence. Remigepant is the only FDA-approved option for both acute treatment of migraine or preventive treatment of episodic migraine. It comes in a 75 milligram ODT tablet. It's the only option available as an ODT as a gepant, which is really nice for patients who don't have water available to them. And it is unique in this acute or preventive treatment. So a patient might potentially start on remigepant as acute treatment and then run into a period of time where their migraine frequency becomes greater and then needs to really switch into the preventive mode where they take it every other day. Because of its use of every other day rather than daily, its side effect profile as a preventive is equal to its side effect profile as an acute treatment, which is really nice for some patients, who, especially those who are worried about side effects. The side effect profile was seen to be nausea and abdominal pain or dyspepsia. And again, these rates were pretty low in the clinical trials. The last treatment we're going to talk about is the Vegepant, and this is our only nasal spray option for acute treatment when it comes to the gepants. Nasal sprays are really important in the treatment of migraine, as many patients, up to 40%, have associated nausea with their attacks. We also think that gastroparesis is very common during a migraine attack, so having non-oral treatment options is very beneficial for patients. It comes with a single dose of 10 milligrams, and it's a single spray as needed during a migraine attack, and its time to onset of efficacy is a little bit faster than the oral treatments. Again, side effect profile that we're seeing in rates greater than 2% was taste disorders, nausea, nasal discomfort, and vomiting. So let's talk a little bit about where the gepants really lay when it comes to their therapy and acute treatment. And let's focus in a little bit in the emergency room. So definitely, I think these are good options to think about when patients have contraindications to standard of care. And in the emergency room, you're going to be using treatments like metoclopramide. You might be using subcutaneous sumatriptan. And you might have patients with cardiovascular disease, prolonged QTC, where you might want to avoid metoclopramide. And maybe they've had a history of a stroke or an MI before. And again, triptan is not a great option there. So this is really a good time to pull out an option like a gepant, especially thinking about the nasal options. We might also think about gepants in patients who have tried triptans before and they just haven't been effective. And then in that case, especially in the emergency room, we're just wasting time. And so it's really nice to have another option. Dr. Greenberg, what do you think about this? Are there other times you might think about a gepant in the emergency room or other tips you would want to offer?
Yes, I totally agree with everything that you said. Unfortunately, where we're at in 2024, 50% of the United States population has hypertension or some form of coronary artery disease or cardiovascular disease. And that does apply to a younger patient population now to age 18 plus. These drugs, not having to worry about those contraindications, it's going to be a really nice tool to have in our toolbox. And also, we see patients in the emergency department who just have difficult IV access. Just to reiterate, in from a couple slides ago, how great would it be that you can give somebody an oral dissolvable tablet or a nasal spray, have them feel better, maybe even arrange for discharge on one of those medications and follow up with.
Yeah, very good points. I didn't even think about IV access, but absolutely. I mean, they come to the emergency room trying to get better, and then you're stuck without being able to do anything. So yeah, these treatments would be extremely helpful in those situations. So let's talk a little bit about the American Headache Society and how they feel the CGRP treatments should be positioned. So they're taking a stance when it comes to positioning these treatments, more especially for prevention, that because of all of the evidence, the safety evidence, the efficacy evidence, and now there's even head-to-head evidence of orenumab compared to topiramate, with patients on orenumab performing better when it comes to improvement in migraine days and functionality, that there's enough evidence at this point to strongly consider anti-CGRP therapies as one of the first-line treatment options that can be offered to patients, as opposed to saving them for when patients are worse off or having to go through several other steps and hoops before patients are able to get there. So just to remind you, this includes our monoclonal antibodies like orenumab, prevenizumab, galcanizumab, and eptinizumab, rimegepant and atogepant, which are oral CGRP receptor antagonists, and other first-line agents that are more traditional options, things like topiramate, divalproate, which are not CGRP-specific and not migraine-specific, but have strong studies showing efficacy, beta blockers, tricyclic antidepressants or SNRIs, and candesartan. These have level A and B evidence for migraine prevention. And then, of course, in our patients with chronic migraine, onobotulinum toxin A. A couple of other important points I wanted to bring up focused on the uniqueness of the gepant class. So ubrogepant has actually been studied during the prodrome phase of migraine. Prodrome is the very first part of migraine before the patient actually has significant pain. These are symptoms patients can experience that tell them that the migraine is starting. During this study, they evaluated patients who had very predictable prodrome, and for these patients, the prodrome would occur up to 6 hours before the attack. For the majority of patients with migraine, 60% can experience prodrome, at least in the various studies that have been done. And most patients can have prodrome up to 36 hours before the headache pain starts. So it can be much larger than that 6 hour window. But for a study, 36 hours is too long. They needed to really hone into a smaller window. They found in the study, five most common prodrome symptoms were nausea, photophobia, dizziness, neck pain. And so these kind of symptoms, very commonly discussed as triggers. These are things that patients think are triggering migraine. Oh, I've been around very bright lights. They actually might have already been started having their migraine attack when these symptoms are occurring. Well, in this study, patients were treated with ubrogepant at the onset of prodrome and or treated with placebo. And the study found that when treated with ubrogepant compared to placebo, patients actually did better, that they didn't progress to having full-blown migraine pain and were more functional after. So this is a very impressive study and taught us quite a lot about how disabling prodrome is and actually getting a treatment that worked this early, because we've tried with triptans and metoclopramide studies in the past and they hadn't shown efficacy. So this is really showing us that the gepants are working in a different method and can be used earlier in attack to really reduce migraine pain and disability. Another important study was looking at rimegepant, looking at pain freedom and most bothersome symptom freedom at 2 hours post-dose. And interestingly here, we see that patients who are on rimegepant and using prevention tend to do better, but just as well as those that don't use prevention at all. So here we're really seeing that patients who are treating their migraine attack can do really well with treatment with rimegepant, and this can be a way to really reduce their disability overall. Final study to review is our study on zavegepant, that nasal spray gepant that we have. And in their pivotal studies, they showed that patients were pain-free at 2 hours at rates around 24% compared to placebo. And they had freedom from most bothersome symptoms around 40% compared to placebo. So Dr. Greenberg, you know, looking at all of this data, what are some of your thoughts on these new treatments and how do you think they might fit into practice?
Yeah, I think just to bring it full circle one more time, we now have great options of an oral dissolvable tablet or a nasal spray to treat migraine headaches. The majority of our patients in the emergency department are going to have some type of cardiovascular risk factor like coronary artery disease or hypertension. IV access may be difficult. I think the one thing that I just want to reemphasize is take this back to your medical directors, or if you are a medical director, have a discussion with pharmacy about getting these drugs on formulary. For the most part, they're not on formulary at the majority of hospitals. Gives yourselves credit for attending the webinar today, and let's see if we can make a difference.
So I think that's it. Great comments. And just to remind everyone that taking care of migraine really is team-based. You know, not only are we working together in the emergency room and the neurology team, but so is primary care. And patients, again, they're often women, so OB-GYN is involved as well. Many of our patients are being seen by their psychologists. The stress of having frequent attacks can really be overwhelming, as we heard from Calvin. The stress from life and the stress from work can also impact the disease as well. So a team-based approach for treatment of migraine is very important. So let's summarize our discussion today with our SMART goals: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. These major points are what we hope you're going to be taking from this presentation to apply to your practice. So assess for headache red flags, rule out other conditions with non-contrast head CT or other tests, and utilize appropriate screening tools and diagnostic agents in the ED setting for patients that have suspected migraine. Consider the role of CGRP receptor antagonists in acute treatment of migraine in the ED for patients that are appropriate. And develop a patient-centered preventive treatment plan for migraine with first-line CGRP receptor antagonist in mind. Today's CMEO briefcase is just one of a three-part series. We have a foundational activity, and then we also have another patient case activity that is set in a primary care women's health setting. Thank you again, Dr. Greenberg, for joining me today, and thank you to all of our audience for joining us. Thank you, CMEO, for this wonderful program. And all of you, be safe and take care of yourself so you can provide the best care for your patients.